Hello, everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I am one of your hosts, Jess Geyer. I'm one half of Wannabe Games, and I make tabletop role-playing games. And I am here, as always, with my co-host, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
Hello, Jess. I'm Craig Campbell. I own Nerdburger Games, and I make tabletop role-playing games and publish those and design them. And I'm dipping my toe into sort of a hybrid card game role-playing game, and it's just wild. But we have with us here today again a friend, a returning guest, Evan. Hello, welcome aboard.
Hi there, I'm Dr. Evan Torner, and I've been on the guests on RPG R&D several times, and I keep coming back because this is a great way to spend a morning.
I agree. But do you hear the sirens in the background of my call? Uh-oh.
No. Are they coming for you?
Someone's been naughty. Someone's gotten in trouble.
Uh-oh.
Someone has made a really bad segue into throwing it over to Craig to talk to us about our topic of the day.
We are talking today about GMing for players who want to portray, not for players who are, but for players who want to portray thieves and troublemakers and pranksters, because they can be a lot of fun, and they can also be incredibly, incredibly disruptive at the table if we're not careful about how we all buy into it and the group kind of experience, you know, what the whole player group is looking for. So we're going to talk a little bit about people playing characters that get into trouble and cause mischief and do all sorts of things that make the GM go, well, my story just went off the rails. Like, we're into a completely new territory here, because that's a thing that can happen too. So I'm going to do what Jess often does. I'm going to steal this from you, this bit, and say, hey, Evan, you chose this topic from our list of topics. Why did you choose this? And what's your experience with this sort of thing?
Well, this is actually going to jump to my interest in live action role playing. I was part of the writing team as well as the HR team for this massive operation in Finland called Odysseus. You can go to odysseuslarp.com and discover more about it. It's a live action role playing scenario in which we took an entire public school and turned it into a spaceship. And then you're playing 50 hours of a Battlestar Galactica style scenario. We had three different runs, a budget of about 200,000 euros and about 20,000 euros of unpaid volunteer labor, maybe 30,000, depending on how people cut that pie. But that's not important. And what's important was I had to write the crime briefing and eventually then wound up playing the major like crime boss of that particular game. Of course, this person was in disguise, and so, you know, it wasn't quite revealed that they were in charge of the masterful crime web. But I noticed in advance of that game, in order for me to make the crime plot work again, because everybody else is crewing a ship, they're engineering, they're med bay, they're bridge, they have clear ship objectives, and my objective was crime. and I suddenly realized I had to be more pro-social in order to play this crime lord than I would have had to have been to play like a doctor or a fighter pilot. And that got me thinking, man, I have to do even more negotiation in order to be antisocial or evil. What's that about?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily even call that antisocial, because if you are an organized crime, the organization part of that crime means that you have to be working with other people. You cannot do big crimes where you're screwing people over and then not have any allies. Otherwise, you get in trouble, you get killed, you get thrown in jail, and then your character's over. I have personal experience playing a character like that and not understanding that. You have to have allies. You have to have allies. You have to have the other members of the party on board. You have to have people who are willing to cover for you. And yeah, in order to do organized crime, like, the best criminals out there are super charismatic. How else are you going to get people to be scofflaws, to be criminals, to do very bad deeds that might sometimes even go against their best interests? You have to be social to do I guess you would call it antisocial behavior. But you know what? We'll talk about what crime is later, I'm sure, and whether or not it's antisocial or pro-social. But yeah, so I'm curious about how you adapted to that, like going from your expectations to the reality of the LARP situation there.
You know, I think it what really drove me to a number of big character decisions was the fact that this ship had no economy. Now, that was, of course, an imposed game master restriction, right? There isn't any economies, there's no money changing hands. And so, of course, you know, you could open up a black market to some degree, but then the black market has to trade in favors or other modes of currency. In order for people to trade in favors, they have to be scared that if the favor is not done, that something is going to happen to them. And now suddenly I'm negotiating all these violence scenes with people or intimidation scenes and whatnot. And when there's no economy, you eventually are like, well, there's no money actually flowing to me. I don't actually, you know, and almost you, I'm here in organized crime unit with like seven or eight other criminals who are definitely going to crack at like the first notice. And so I had to be like, well, why don't I crack first and then help protect them out of some weird familial agency? Well, that created most of my plot line, actually, was there's no economy. I'm going to open things up. I'm going to try and have a little bit of a redemption arc, because that's, of course, what you want in like a Firefly style, you know, spaceship thing. And it didn't go as planned, because half the ship wanted revenge on me for things I directly did to them, or my organization did to them. And so then, of course, it became about me getting shot in the head, punched. I was just not, I was not a devious master criminal. I was a scapegoat for an entire community. And I thought, how did that happen? Well, I was pro-social in advance, and I was still putting myself out there. And people want a criminal punching bag. They want to have someone who they can feel about punishing, because they have other issues going on that they're working out through punishing you. And I think about that also in terms of like a conventional Dungeons and Dragons party, where you've got the paladin who's always there to like patrol the thief. And I'm thinking like, yeah, but you know, you're hanging out together. Can't you find a reason why you're hanging out together? But ultimately, you know, the paladin thief dynamic is this, you know, like, unless you've got an agreed upon friendship that they're working with, there's always a dimension where the paladin could become a cop, and the thief is then suddenly in this weird position. And that's where I really want to talk about, what is crime? What are we dealing with when we talk about crime?
I mean, Craig, you have a whole line of games that's essentially a bunch of criminals doing crimes. Who are they doing crimes against in your game?
Well, in all the caper stuff, I mean, that's it's, you know, 1920s era gangsters. So they're criming against all sorts of people. You know, they've got the law enforcement that they're up against. They're dealing with their own with their rivals, with other rival gangs. And then there's always, you know, the possibility that somebody in the group is going to decide that, you know, hey, you know, I should be in charge of this organization that I'm a part of, or I should seize control of the group, like the character group, and even kind of try to exert my influence there. And so that starts to become one of those things that, you know, has to kind of be. I have typically dealt with it with like meta negotiation of like outside the game, making sure that like, okay, nobody, anything that we do with our characters, nobody's gunning for you personally. Nobody's trying to put one over on you personally. We're playing characters that are doing these things that might be double crossing each other or setting each other up, and get everybody kind of on board with that sort of thing. Now, even when you do that, you can run into this, one-upsmanship that people start to get into, where if somebody double crosses somebody else, that person, even though they're like, hey, these are just characters, I'm still friends with Jess, but you know, she just pulled one on me that really kind of hurt my character. Well, I am going to get back at Jess. I'm going to get one, pull something on her. And that, you know, it's funny, because as Evan was telling the story of these people looking for that punching bag, looking for vengeance, I was like, in my head, I was thinking, oh, so they're playing their characters like human beings, like people who would actually do that. And we all know, no matter how self-righteous we might be, that if, you know, in the right situation, we would be like, I want to get my, you know, I want that person to get their comeuppance. I want to get my satisfaction. I want justice. In some form. And so that becomes a line that you walk when you run games that involve those things, or even more so, that center on such things. Because you have to kind of, it's one of those things that it can turn into, we talk occasionally, especially in LARPs, about bleed, mm-hmm. And bad feelings and feelings of betrayal and kind of being picked on or hurt, bleeding over into your real life. And you walk away from the game, you're like feeling really terrible yourself when, you know, ideally you would walk away with just like, that was an interesting experience that I played through my character. And we have to be careful, because any game can kind of go down that road, you know, in the right circumstances. But when you're dealing with players portraying the worst of humanity, that, you know, the risk is much realer.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes into like the idea of what is crime in the first place, because what it has to do with is who sets the rules and who has legitimacy in breaking or bending them. So if you are playing, like, for example, like that paladin thief dynamic, who sets the rules? Well, the paladin has the righteous, lawful goodness of God on their side, and the thief is committing crimes in this traditional, like, you know, what we imagine is committing crimes against that system. But let's say if the thief was going to do thievy actions against the chaotic evil overlord, the paladin would probably be a little bit more, that's a little bit more legitimate. It's legitimate to break an unjust set of rules. And we're not just talking either just about like, you can have your crimes against your holy rules, you can have crimes against your legal rules, and you can have crimes against your societal rules as well. Like, is it okay to lie to your friends? Is it okay to try to backstab and climb up the hierarchy in your criminal organization? Those are breaking the rules of that specific group. It's really about whether or not those rules are legitimate to the society that would be judging the criminal, quote unquote criminal, and whether or not the rules are legitimate to the criminal themselves. So like in Moonpunk, I mean, people commit crimes all the time, but the crimes that they're committing are usually against a fascist, corrupt person or group of people. And that's legitimate. And none of the people who matter to judge the characters, who matter societally to the characters, are going to care that they are, you know, committing those kinds of crimes. But as soon as you, like, for example, in Moonpunk, there are favors. As soon as you don't pay off your favor to a fellow punk, well, now you've just broken this rule. Like, how are we supposed to function if you're going to break that rule that's so important to us? So, like, there's just different layers that can happen. And it really, like, again, it's all about legitimacy and the rules themselves. And I think if you can direct, like as a GM, if you can direct your players or make it more obvious to them where those rules stand and what it means for people to break them, you could maybe redirect that thief from, instead of constantly antagonizing and just like doing petty crime and mean crime, like, I'm gonna steal candy from babies, I'm gonna punch this old lady, like whatever the crime is, you can maybe direct them to do crimes that will still satisfy that little troublemaker aura inside of them. You could direct them to do either, number one, less harmful, pranky kind of things that aren't going to completely disrupt the society. They're just going to be annoying. Or, hey, direct your criminal intentions toward what really matters, because you could use those skills for good. It's tricky. But I think if our players are being pro-social with each other, they will be more pro-social at the table.
Yeah, I think that both the thief and the paladin are conditionally accepted in different ways. In a standard adventuring party, the thief is conditionally accepted that they're using their skills for good. The paladin is conditionally accepted that they're not going to, in fact, enforce the full laws of their state and religion in this context. And that's, again, the sort of basic compromise that we enjoy. But when I always think of crime first at the character level and then move it into sort of the plot line. The character level, I think of three different temporalities. One being it's in the past, it's your character's background. they might never commit another crime again, but it's then, you know, part of who they are, sort of Han Solo style. I was a smuggler. I'm not going to smuggle a damn thing in this in this movie, but I'm definitely going to, you know, have it flavor who I am and how people receive me. And then I could draw on that as an archetype. Then there's the present. And this is the Dragonlance Kender problem, or maybe Dragonlance Kender fun of like, I'm just naturally into crime and thievery and tricksterdom. I'm going to play tricks because that's who I am. And that's what I see is a very much focused on the present and very short-term thinking. And often this is the one that creates the most annoying problems and is the least social of the three temporalities. And the third one, of course, being future thinking, the heist, the larger con, the big game. So a thief is often coming into this sort of situation where they'll usually have the background and then they have to decide, well, are we heist level or am I, if I see a bag of gold, I take it sort of level, right? And you know, in GMing this situation, then you have to first say, okay, how many of you have this kind of known background? Because there was in the AD&D era, the ninja class. You could be a ninja. And the ninja's whole shtick was they had to conceal that they were a ninja from the party. So they were something else, but they were kind of bad at it. And so their character sheet was not, their real character sheet was not to be revealed. They even may have had a fake character sheet. And they then did ninja things, often as a thief in giant quotes, but then actually were, you know, a ninja, and then would have to run separate other scenarios with the dungeon master one-on-one for this kind of subterfuge. I've never gotten it to work. It's way easier for me to just go up to the player group and say, look, I'm going to play a ninja, so you're going to like be interacting with my face, but then, you know, behind the scenes, I'm going to do these ninja things and you'll have this nice meta level understanding. Once I'm actually in a position as a player, especially where I have to keep secrets from the group, and I have to actively maintain those secrets at the table in order for this fun to unfold, I've now created a number of different weird strains that also for game mastering that it now I have to commit a lot of extra efforts to maintain this facade. So that's where I'm talking about pro-social activity. You really have to start doing your homework and being very proactive to keep like a secretive criminal plot line going. It's much easier to be like, all right, everybody, you're all part of my big heist, or I'm the kind of annoying person who just takes stuff from people. Or, you know, if I see an easy opportunity right there before me, I'm going to take it.
Then you also need to build in, as the GM, the opportunities for justice to be meted out or punishment to be meted out. Sometimes those are the same, sometimes they're different. And also rehabilitation. Those are the consequences. Because it's not fun to just play the little troublemaker and then never get caught. That's not how we do things. Part of the thrill is the thrill of being caught. And eventually you're gonna have to face up, maybe escape that punishment, but you're gonna have to face up.
Yeah, and one of the things I find interesting that's popping into my head as I'm listening to each of you talk about things, like Jess was talking about what is crime, and you're talking about like, well, eventually somebody's going to get caught and how are you going to deal with that? And Evan is talking about the Kender, you know, situation, not problem, the situation of like the Kender going to steal stuff from people because the Kender are, that's just how they are. They don't recognize the concept of personal property. They just, it's just like, oh, this is kind of a neat thing. I've got it. I put it in my pocket and I walk away. And then there becomes that plays into nuance and justifying behavior and how the players themselves approach that and how they embody their characters to approach that sort of thing. Like, you know, is it like Evan made the comment, like, I'm never going to smuggle again, but you know what? Hey, you know, Han Solo analog, who's playing in this space evil empire game. Would you smuggle if the smuggling would ultimately serve to free some oppressed people? Where's your line? You know, and you know, the Kender situation with like, well, you know, everybody just kind of deals with it and the Kender is able to talk their way out of things. Like, can you as a player come up with a way to justify doing things that is reasonable to the other people in the group that you can embody in your character and have your character justify some of the things that they did that are potentially crimes or causing trouble, causing mayhem, whatever. That can lead to some a few different things. It can be really interesting conversations at the table about kind of working out what's allowed and what's not, and having discussions about like what is okay to do, and why it's okay, even if by the letter of the law it doesn't seem to be. And it can also become absolute chaos, and it can create a lot of potential, you know, feelings, problems between people, where, you know, people are taking advantage of a situation. And if somebody who is a very talkative, very extroverted person who has a, you know, has a big personality and is very, can be very convincing and very charming as a person, as a player, like they might take control of a situation, not necessarily trying to, you know, upset anybody, but that's just, you know, that they've got a personality that does this, and they, you know, can kind of convince everybody at the table, who then, you know, quietly doesn't want to rock the boat and goes along with, and then all of a sudden everybody's, you know, like committing some crimes that, like, maybe it's going against what your character really would do. And so you have to give some thought to all of that, and how you're going to portray that, how you're going to address that as players sitting at a table all having fun together, and then also within the narrative of the story when it plays out that way.
Yeah, we actually in most fantasy campaigns are going to be playing a corruption narrative. We're not going to be playing a redemption narrative. I think because in order for you to have a redemption narrative, you're going to have increasingly evil threats. Whereas it's much easier to be like, you are a naive person, but now you know how the world really works, and you get to keep going into that. And of course, the neutral ground we find is this kind of compartmentalization of the adventurers. They're not, you know, becoming morally more corrupt, but they are learning more about the world and at least assuming bigger shades of gray. I wanted to also comment on Jess's point about the thrill of being caught, because again, you've got like two big criminal archetypes, one being kind of Badger from Firefly, where you're Mr. Sketchy Dude. Everybody knows you're a sketchy dude. If people want crime done, they come to you because you are the sketchy crime guy. That's who you are. And that is, you know, almost a protected status, right? You need sketchy crime to do sketchy crime. And then you have the Dr. Mabuza master criminal, where they're full of secrets. They've got a vast web of activities going on. It kind of, you know, if you're playing the Badger character, you kind of don't want then your fellow players to just like catch you all the time, because of course, like, you're openly Mr. Crime, so why would you do that? But if you're again playing the secretive heist type, then it demands a huge amount of work from you, either as a player or jointly with the game master, and it can all unravel at a moment's notice. And then what does that do with your character's self-conception? Are they a master criminal if they made a stupid fuck up? Like, sorry, a stupid screw up? You know, how did they, how did that affect things? And of course, you want to see that arc, right? You thought you were a master criminal, but now, you know, you didn't do so well. So where are we going with this? But ultimately, you know, that may affect how a player sees their character. And it may be better to just be like, oh, everybody knows you do the thieving and the crime stuff. But the other part of the thrill of being caught is being put on trial. That is one of the best things ever. I have to say, if your character gets put on trial, that people provide evidence. They see you. They have to. They have to decide if you're guilty or innocent. And being put on trial means that people talk about you a lot. It's great.
You know, one of my favorite scenes ever in a game or in a movie or anything like that is when the crime guy gets caught, he's put on trial, he's about to be executed, and all of the other players who have been a little bit more high and mighty up to this point have to do crime to save because that's their crime guy. They love this crime guy, and they will break the law to save this crime guy's life. That is always the best scene, and if you can negotiate that as a GM, you can get the paladin or the goody-goody-two-shoes priest to do crimes to save the life of their friend, because hopefully this person is also, you know, being a friend to the rest of the players. Otherwise, you have other problems to deal with. That is so fun to do.
And you have to justify it to get those goody two shoes to go along with it, because we need the crime guy in order to do this thing over here that's going to be beneficial for a much larger group of people. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. Yeah, good stuff.
And I mean, like with that, like I'm the skeezy crime guy kind of character too. Like, yeah, you don't want to get caught all the time, but the danger in getting caught is that, yes, even though people need you, who's going to back you up if the actual authorities come for you? Because no one will do it, because everyone knows that you're the crime guy. That's kind of the thing. If you're the master criminal, maybe that is when your character takes a turn, or maybe it was all part of your plan all along to get caught, which is another whole fun thing to do. We've talked a lot about, like, there's like one, maybe two criminals, but like when the whole group is criminals as well, I think it's a little easier to kind of negotiate. It can be a little harder for the GM if you're not playing a game that's like specifically and explicitly about doing crimes. It's not a heist game. It's not Capers, for example. It's not it's not even Moonpunk, like where you're just being kind of like hooligans and breaking the law. But if you're playing a game where you imagine that they would be more or less following the rules of society that they're living in, and then all of a sudden they're like, no, let's do a crime. How do you handle that? when all of them have thrown you off guard. They're all on play, all on the plan to, like, yeah, we were gonna work for the rich billionaire and do this problem, but we've decided instead we're gonna rob his house. Like, what do we do?
There's a number of different indie games that are addressing this precise thing. One is Perfect by Avery Alder, where you are in a dystopia and you are you're all criminals, right? You're all thought criminals in a 1984 sense. And then the other game that comes to mind, Fiasco comes to mind, where everyone is going to get embroiled in the crime, and it's going to devour everybody. And then the other one I was thinking of was one moment. The other interesting one in terms of, now you got to edit this, Craig. there was Perfect, and then there's the other one where you're all criminals. Poisoned. There's Poisoned by Vincent Baker, where you are all pirates, and in Poisoned, background you have is really you've done horrible things, like really nasty things. You're all in it. You're pirates. You've done horrible things, and of course the premise is you're probably going to likely do even more horrible things to each other, because the narrative is going to be driven to a certain point. And I remember when that game came out and had a great deal of controversy, because they're like, well, everybody's a criminal and they've done some pretty nasty stuff, including, if I remember correctly, sexual violence. And so, like, you know, this is all kind of on the table, and now we have to sit there with these different criminal backgrounds and feel what it's like to be a pirate in this way. I think Vincent just laughed. I think, you know, it's like, yeah, of course, here you are. Now we're exploring what it means to have been a pirate, you know, in the 17th century, but also to know ultimately you're living outside of the boundaries of the state, right? And so now you've got a different realm of negotiation. I was always thinking, you know, around the time of the Vietnam War, of Richard Nixon, where we also had a whole bunch of different crime movies coming out, like The Secret Rouge by Melville, or The Godfather, which basically argue, yeah, we're all criminals. You know, why do we put on this air that some people are good and some people are evil? We're all criminals. No, and all, the only thing that makes us different is really, you know, what weird values we're pursuing in the middle of there. Do we have a sense of honor? Is there a protected class we won't ever touch? I will not do crimes on this person. I will not do this, right? Wherever you draw the line is going to be where really the narrative starts happening.
What about, I think now is a good time, since we're talking about this whole group being criminals, how can we design our games in ways that accommodate this and help the GM plan for these kinds of criminal escapades, criminal organizations, or even the one person who's the crime guy. Like, how do we plan ahead and make things easier for the GM or for the players to negotiate this at the table? Because in my opinion, that's what rules of games do. We've name dropped several games. What do they do?
Well, I mean, just going to one that I'm sure a lot of people listening know, and I think all probably know, is Fiasco assumes you're all going to get involved in these crimes. Things are going to go very, very poorly. And the best case scenario is that you as an individual will end up back where you started. Like, nobody wins. A win is to not like have everything go bad, just to end up kind of where you started. And so I think when it comes to a game, if you got a game that's going to focus on that sort of thing, if everybody doing crime, you could make it so like, oh, and everybody goes, we all go off and we do all these bad things and we engage in crimes and it's a power trip and we all just leave that at the door and we have our little fantasy, you know, that we play that. And then we all go back to being hopefully like decent human beings in our real lives. Or you can use this type of a game to explore what all of that means. And I think the game needs to have things built into it that mimic in a gamist sort of way, not necessarily super realistically, but, you know, with some level of mechanical, you know, game mechanic to it that deal with. How do you can you measure guilt in the game? Like, does this stuff start to weigh on your soul? And how does that affect you? And does it cause you to make mistakes, to second guess yourself and things? And you could build a mechanic to do that sort of thing. You could build a mechanic similar to Heat in Blades in the Dark, where like the consequences start to build. It's only a matter of time before something really bad happens. And we're going to build up to that where like you get away with some stuff, you get to do some stuff and you have fun and you play that part of the game. But the consequences are always looming. There's always something. And you could build that as something that either the players as they're playing know that, okay, well, you know, it's going to happen. I know the rules of the game. Like there's a point where it's going to happen. Or you can make it something that is semi-transparent where they start to get a sense of how close we are to things really going bad, where the grip of the law starts to tighten down on them, or somebody that they've wronged starts to take shots at them or people that they care about. And they start to see the vice slowly starting to close. And you can build a lot of tension into the game by doing that. And that would, you know, reflect, I think, probably how a lot of people outside of actual sociopaths who don't feel emotions would feel when they're in the position of like, you know, I'm doing these things and I have my reasonings and whatnot, right? All that nuance and justification. But like, I have to deal with this fact that like, there's very real consequences and there are things that are around me that I can't control and they're coming. And how do I handle that on an emotional level? How do I keep out of actual harm's way and, you know, avoid imprisonment and whatever else might be a consequence?
I guess there was a very sophisticated system that dealt with this, which is Unknown Armies, right? Which dealt with sort of the psychological terror of not only the supernatural, but also just being a human and doing, you know, being isolated, feeling, you know, like you aren't yourself or something like that. And of course their magic system was, you know, you have to kind of pay the universe in order for you to get something. And so if you are a kleptomancer, you would actually gain magical power by stealing stuff, increasingly, you know, powerful stuff. And if you were an entropomancer, you would gain power by taking unnecessary risks. And if you have two of them in a party, well, let me tell you what happened. We had a first session and then we had a side session with just the kleptomancer and entropomancer because we blew all our magical charges in session one. And the game master said, well, let's go and have like a mini session where you recharge. So these characters go into like a mall. And within 90 minutes, they are driving off in a stolen car with lots
The
of
mall car?
exactly. It is
I
unclear which
love
car
that.
they stole, but they was definitely they're tearing off away, having committed so many crimes in the 90 minutes and have attracted like Grand Theft Auto, GTA, like style level of police attention, that we just had to abandon those characters. We made new characters for session two. We just were like that, and then that happened, and we're
Well,
just gonna.
we figured out where this game system takes that.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe we
But
need to adjust our plans and expectations.
yeah, I mean, basically, if you give, players points for crime and like the characters aren't real, then like, what do you do? Well, you're gonna do a lot of crimes, and then of course there's the state, the police are there, and that also happens. And then you eventually realize that like the GTA, like all police pursuing you kind of situation is not that fun after a while. You
Yeah.
prefer the slow burn morality play. Like Dostoevsky Crime and Punishment style, where you've done something and you could get caught. How do you feel about that? And so there's a thrill of possibly getting caught, but then also there's something about this that's weighing on your conscience that's also a little bit interesting to play with. And of course, like that's I would say the more flavorful flat crime genre rather than like let's go on a spree. And the spree will get out of control very quickly because I have to create more criminal activity to cover up the previous bout.
I like the idea of like the heat mechanic. Like the obviously that works really well in GTA. The more heat you have on you, the more helicopters show up trailing you, the worse off you are. And then you have to figure out a way to cool down that heat. If you could replicate that game mechanic, that's great. I know that there are some games out there that use a version of heat. I think Blaze in the Dark, right? Has heat. And that can be a really good deterrence from having the players just commit crimes willy-nilly. Makes them have to think through their plans a little bit more if you want something like that. Or in a game like Fiasco, where it doesn't matter what the heat is, it's supposed to be a one shot. You're not supposed to be carrying these characters on, which can allow you to do like the really over the top things. Again, the game's called Fiasco. It tells you exactly what it's going to be about just in the name. But I'm thinking about also like those games where you're starting off as criminals, maybe not even having done anything that would have like the maybe the laws that you broke were an unjust system of laws, and you are criminals on the lam from a corrupt society or a corrupt government. And then in that case, like that doesn't necessarily fit into the troublemaker trope. You could be incredibly moral actors in this case, but you are constantly on the run. And then like having the heat kind of mechanic, like how long can you stay in this space? How it could be like more like a timer. How long do you have to stay? Can you stay here before you have to run? How long do you have to gather your resources before you have to move on to the next place? And what are the consequences from not doing that quickly enough? I think all of those are things that you could consider while you're creating your game. But I think the number one thing you have to do is to make it very explicit to the players who are reading your game. Who makes the laws? Who gets to decide what's the crime? And what would the punishment be if you do get caught? Having those stakes laid out right away, I think can help the players direct their actions, and also gives the GM, if there's a GM in your game, gives the GM the excuse to mete out that punishment and kind of rein things back in when necessary. I don't feel like D&D does that very well. For example, yeah, they have gods and stuff like that, but everyone has like a different god, and there's like what are the laws in this world? Who gets to decide? And kind of all of that's left to negotiation at the table, which is where a lot of these, like when you have something that's kind of loosey-goosey like that, I don't know, it can put a lot of pressure on the GM to decide like, well, yeah, now the cops are coming, the fantasy cops are coming after you, and they're gonna put you in jail. And now I have to figure out what to do. Oh, I feel bad about having your character killed off, but that's kind of like, I guess, the law. But if you had that kind of like explicitly laid out, then you have the go ahead right there from the rules. Like, this isn't me. It's the rules say so, but let's keep the game on track, please.
I find myself too thinking that, you know, we come back to, you know, a character getting caught, getting imprisoned, you know, getting killed. Those are all very personal, but there's a lot of other stuff that you could build as part of your mechanics too. Like the game could have, as part of its character creation system, is okay, well, you've generated your character, you've got all these stats, blah de blah, you've got, you know, like the cool specializations and things that your character can do, whatever. You all know what kind of character, what kind of criminals you are. Now everybody make a list of five things your character really cares about: people, places, ideals,
evil,
and that sort of thing. And then as things go wrong, as the characters you know, engage in these crimes, you can, as the GM, and you could mod this into house ruling in your own game. But as the designer, you can build in, like, there could be scales for these different things. You could even have, like, you know, five different things and rank them one through five. And it takes longer for like your number one thing to get hurt or taken away from you or suffer or whatever. But it's other things can go, you know, like that are further down the list might go faster. So you might find yourself, like, you know, you've got this, you know, you've got a family, you know, your family, just for the simplicity's sake, that everybody understands this. You've got your character's family is important to them. And then as the game goes along, one of your family members, as a result of something you've done, gets hurt or gets framed for one of your crimes, or you know, something. Like, you can just slowly build all that stuff, and you can, now you can't go and visit your family, so you don't have that connection with them personally. You can't go and, like, actually be physically present with your family, because it would endanger them. The cops are probably watching them. It would endanger yourself being caught. So now your character can't, you know, you've lost a safe house. You've lost, you know, a way to kind of ground your character, and your character might become more reckless or less reckless, depending on how you decide to portray the loss of your family or endangering of your family, you know, of the character's family. So, and you could do that with all sorts of things. Like, it could be like, you know, you had a community church that you really cared about, and like, if you anger, you tick off the wrong people, and this probably works better when it's not the law that's coming after you, unless it's like Jess was talking about, like a corrupt government. It probably works better in a game where it's like gangster groups and stuff, where like they'll be like, well, I can't catch Jess and I can't catch her character, so we'll squeeze the you know, the community church, we'll squeeze the minister and the parishioners, and like make life difficult for them, and that will now affect how Jess portrays the character. And it could take you down the road of like, maybe I need to change my ways. And it could take you down the road of, somebody's gonna pay.
Yeah, I was thinking like in the old West.
And then it becomes a spiral. It becomes just a spiral. And what happens when your character, you know, in the game mechanics wise, what happens when your character has lost all of that? Now your character is the, let's all say it together, the character who has nothing left to lose. Which, how many movies and TV shows and books and everything else have we all read or watched that has the character who has nothing left to lose? And the truth is, they always have something more to lose. It's just a question of within the game helping the GM find that and be able to exploit that in the end. And that could be a whole, like, you reach level 20 in D&D, congratulations, you've reached the pinnacle of the game. Well, in this game, you've got nothing left to lose. This is like the end game of this game. Well, what does that mean, and how are we going to play that out?
Yeah, in order to pull something like that off, you kind of do need, like, it was kind of fascinating to me, Evan, when you're talking about this game on the ship and you're playing a criminal and there's no economic system involved. There's no money, nothing like that. It's all favors. I mean, like a vampire LARP similarly kind of has something like that, although the favors are more imposed. they have a structure within the game. But you do need to have some sort of, like, not necessarily a resource in the way we consider resources. It doesn't have to be money. It doesn't have to be objects even, but it does have to be like it could be your connections with other people. It could be your, like you said, your safe houses. Like, in order to have, in order to, if you're not going to be throwing people in jail or executing them as your punishment, which can put a stopper on a game if the game's about crime, if you're not going to be doing that, you have to be able to take something away. There has to be some sort of consequence, whether that's a reputation or like your safe houses, your characters, NPCs. They do have to have something to care about. I don't think a game would work. Correct me if I'm wrong, if you can think of a good one. I don't think a game would work if all people at the table had no emotional attachment to anything. They had no sense of guilt and you just let them do whatever. I don't think that that works. I've even played a couple of chaotic evil campaigns. They're little flashes in the pan. They're really fun for like a little bit of time. And then not again, because there's no, like, it's hard to build a narrative around that. You just need I'm curious about how, like, economy, how do you do it?
Yeah, you have like, I just found myself thinking of video games when you're talking about that, Jez. Like, there's plenty of video games where it's just like, oh, just shoot them up, run around, do stuff, you know, be a criminal, whatnot. But then we all know stories of games where you go out and your character does stuff and does maybe some things that they shouldn't be doing, they're whatever. And in the story of the game, either because it's part of the set story, like cutscenes and whatnot, or because it's, you know, it actually gets developed by the AI of the game and like, okay, you do enough stuff. And like, all of a sudden, like this NPC is captured or killed or imprisoned or something. Mm-hmm. And especially if they get killed, people get really attached and really upset when they lose those things. They didn't create that character for themselves. That character was given to them by the game, but they came to care about that character. And so, you know, in a role-playing game where you're actually generating that stuff, where the player is generating that stuff for their character, even more so, like I think just you hit the nail on the head. There has to be things to lose. There has to be ways to punish outside of just imprisonment or death, because that's the end of the play experience for that character. Unless breaking out of prison is part of the game. Breaking that's a whole other beast.
But to some degree, you know, we talk a little bit about mafias as this exceptional state, when in fact the mafia model is the natural human way of regulating violence. I'm going to say this just in terms of, you know, before there were laws, there was sort of the Viking system of blood feuds, where if you've taken the life of one of my clansmen, then my clan has a right to take a life of one of yours, or rather, you don't get to like inflict mass death. We don't get to inflict mass death on each other. It's just this tracking of who has an eye for an eye, which also then forced people to start tracking their family lineages so that this complicated system could be sustained over time, and two, generating laws, because then you don't have to be like, wait, they killed two of ours. Does that mean we get to kill two of theirs?
You can't go for a child. Don't do that.
Yeah, that's right. And so
you
that's
kill
where we
two
get
nobodies. You can't kill. You can't kill two of our leaders.
Yeah, you can't kill. Right, exactly. Not everybody is created equal in the hierarchy, etc. So really, you know, when we are looking at organized crime, it's actually back to basics in a way that is, you know, often nested within a more complex modern society. I also think that we're talking about some pretty heavy stuff here, but the tricksters are also part of the, you know, the equation, and there again, the fiction novelists have a huge leg up on us in tabletop RPGs. They can just write a funny character, and then, you know, there's no one's feelings you have to navigate. Whereas you have the trickster character, and they play a prank on another player character, and that has to be at least a little bit negotiated or understood, or there has to be some sort of understanding, or you can actually create a transgression within the party or against the social contract of the game. So, you know, here in this fiction, they'd be like, oh, ha ha ha, this guy spiked that guy's drink. That's fine. If you as a player, like, write a note to a game master, smuggle it to them, make a secret roll, spike this person's drink, then they drink it. That's a whole thing. You've now just created a giant chunk of play and mistrust right there at the table. It's really dramatic to do that kind of trickery play, unless it's already an understanding of, oh, my character just plays my pranks on yours, and you're just like, ah, but, you know.
You, oh, you, and just wags your finger at them.
Which again, you find that in comic books all the time. It's how people treat Deadpool. Like, you know, it's just but actually at a table, you know, we're very much eye to eye in these fairly serious relationships, and have to then be like, okay, well, how do we, you know, how are we a little bit more relaxed about that when we have these smaller transgressions against each other?
Maybe putting in a rule, don't do this against the other players, can be helpful in a game where you don't want them to do this stuff against the other players. That might be a quick little Band-Aid fix.
Well, it's a Band-Aid fix, and it's also, you know, it's going to be immediately house ruled out by groups who don't want to play that way. And that's okay. Like, there's nothing wrong with stating as a game designer, stating the rule for what you intend the rule what you intend the game to be, how you intend it to be played, because everything you do is telling the reader how you intend the game to be played. So providing rules to say, don't do this, don't do that, that's fine. People who don't want to abide by that will house rule that out. But you can take it a step further and say, okay, we've got a game where we've got an inherent amount of comedy that's going to happen in this game. People are going to do trickstery, prankstery things. Okay, so if you do a prankstery thing, Evan, your character does a prankstery thing on Jess's character and give them a hot foot or whatever, you know, like some embarrassing thing, and Jess gets to portray, ooh, you know, I'm so angry, blah, blah, blah. Okay, Evan, you gain a little bonus because, like, you feel super confident and you're kind of cocky and, like, everything's cool. And then you're going to go and we play the game and you spend your little point of bonus, whatever, at some point. But if you do another thing like that before Jess gets you back, you don't get a bonus this time. So we're going to build it into the game that it's going to be a give and take. Everybody gets to get gotten, and everybody gets to get somebody else. And you don't get to get somebody else until you've been gotten.
Or the more getting that you've gotten means the getting that the other person will get will be even bigger.
Yeah.
Get.
Yeah, you're kind of then, like, ever evolving, you know, who, but again, you're still in the Viking system. Who has gotten last? Right. Who is the last victim? So that then they're the one who now has the bonus.
Right. Who accidentally gets caught in the crossfire and is now part of the war.
But the interesting thing that I think might happen there, not necessarily with every group, but with a lot of groups, is that it becomes less about, okay, I got you a bunch of times, but it gets to be more about, okay, now I have to just, you know, I have to take my medicine when it comes, but all this while I'm cooking up the next idea and it's going to be even better, and I have to do something different. Like, every time everybody has to do something different. You can't do the same thing every time. You can't do the same thing as somebody else did. You can't repeat your own little prank. It becomes like, you're only going to get to do it so often. So when you do it, when you play the prank, make it good. Make it something like, whoa, people are going to go, wow, that was really imaginative. And they're all going to have fun with it, because now you have to sit back and take your medicine a couple times before you get to do it again. But during that time while you're waiting, you get to be imagining up the next wacky trick that you're going to pull on some other character or on an NPC or whatever. And so it becomes more about just, like, the imagination of coming up with things rather than piling on anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. We want to avoid bullying at all costs. And tricksterness can evolve into bullying, and also real, like, sort of crime play where you're building larger crimes can really easily have intimidation and bullying built in as well. So you have to kind of modulate that, being like, okay, these characters have this relationship, but we as players don't have that relationship. What are we okay with? And then if not, then you have to kind of look for these genre fiction fixes. Oh, you know, we all have an understanding that this person might do this, or my character's too obtuse to notice that. And there are always those solutions when you have the player agreement. When you don't have the player agreement, you can have annoyance, mistrust, and you know, some very testy situations.
And you could build that into the game mechanics too, not in a, like, dice rolling mechanical way, but character sheet kind of creation thing. It's like, for your character in this game where we're all going to be pranksting each other and doing things, like, what are your buttons? What are the buttons people can press on you to get you? Give them, so that way, and that way you're giving permission as a player to say, okay, you can make fun of this, you can do this thing, you can do this thing with my character. And so everybody's pranks need to focus on that sort of thing. And then it just becomes, then it again becomes the question of like, you know, how can we make this interesting each time and how can we do it differently each time? I find myself thinking, as I so often do, of the A-Team, where the shtick was always to get BA to fly somewhere. He was afraid of flying. So they always had to find a way to drug him. And every time, they never drugged him the same way twice. Like it was always, it was always a shtick. It was always like, how do they manage to get BA on a plane? And once in a while it backfires. So yeah, you mean you just like find a different way to do these different things and, you could build it, you can actually build it into the game and it becomes actually kind of partly a safety tool. Like you can, you can go after me on these grounds and I'll be okay with it.
I mean, the safety tools are, I think, incredibly important. Sorry, my dog's clicky clacking on the linoleum. He's okay. Afraid of the Discord noise, and I just had to have my husband come in and turn off his Discord noise. He's terrified of it. I don't know why. Do we have any final thoughts before we wrap up for today? Maybe recommendations for games or things that you didn't get a chance to say?
Gosh.
I want to say, just real quickly, I want to say I'm very proud of us for remembering to talk about safety tools, but also for waiting, like not just having it be like the first thing out of the blocks, because we tend to be very, to our credit and to our guest credit and everything, I think we tend to be very cognizant of making sure that like the safety tools are useful. They help to do things and to navigate some things. But we got so interested in this as a topic so quickly and really got kind of absorbed into it that we kind of got to the end of it. And we're like, oh, wait, by the way, you know, like this is absolutely like a safety tool kind of thing. Make sure we're not going to be doing, you know, portraying crime that like, oh, maybe I don't want to have this at the table because I've been the victim of that particular crime, or I have very strong feelings about it because of a family member being, you know, on one end or the other of the crime or whatever, you know, there's a lot of things. So anyway.
Well, Craig mentioned that they were developing a card-based story game. So I'm going to plug Fedora Noir by Carolyn Hobbs. I think that's a great a card game that allows you to have this sort of simmering noir relationship that, again, is built in a crime based universe, one that you know, people have all done crimes, but are your crimes greater than the crimes that are committed? And you know, how do you feel about that? I can do a punchy session in under the 2 hours. The one that I haven't gotten to a table yet is Banana Chan's Exquisite Crime, which again is going to you know, promise a very surrealist experience from looking at that.
I don't have any specific recommendations other than what we've already talked about. We've mentioned a lot of games and I think that a lot of them are really great. I think I like doing crimes in my games, but I like it when they're doing crimes against the state.
Never would have figured that out from you, Jess.
I know.
You never talk about it.
I don't. Evan, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Yes. Thank you.
Where can we find you and your stuff?
Oh man, I guess I'm no longer really on X. I'm on Blue Sky. So I will just say you can find me at guyinTheBlackHat.bsky.social.
You can find me at, I always forget what order. Do I go next? Yeah, it doesn't matter. You can find me on the internet at Josca or at wannabegames.com.
And you can find me at Nerdburger Craig on various social medias. The website is nerdburgergames.com.
Thank you to our opening and closing theme song, which is Avail by Steph Sachs, licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you, Steph Sachs. And thank all of you for listening. And we'll see you back here next time. And there's more sirens outside. What perfect timing to open and close this episode. Bye.
Now go do imaginary crimes.
Don't get arrested. Bye.
Bye.
Don't get caught.